Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Service's Acting Chief Information Officer and Director of the Indian Health Service's Office of Information Technology. Howard, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So we have had the CIO from the Indian Health Service on several times on the show before, but this is the first time for you because I think you're a fairly new acting CIO. Give me a sense of your background a little bit. How long have you been acting CIO? Where else have you worked in the Indian Health Service, in government, in industry? Just give me a sense of you.
Well, I started as the acting CIO for IHS on August 29th, so I've been in the role a couple of months now. Prior to that, for 4 years, I was what's known as the investment manager for the IHS Resource and Patient Management System. Our PMS is our comprehensive health information system that's used by the federal IHS facilities across the country and by most of our tribal programs. And before that time, I was the lead on the IHS Electronic Health Record Project since about 2003. So I've worked for Office of Information Technology for 8-9 years at this point. I've been in the Indian Health Service for over 24 years. I've served as a medical officer and as a facility medical director and in some other roles at both regional and national levels over the years. IHS headquarters is my fifth duty station. I've worked in South Dakota, Minnesota, Alaska, and Arizona before this. My background is that I'm trained and board certified as a family physician. But I also have master's degrees in biomedical engineering and public health, so there's sort of a natural fit with a CIO role in a public health agency like the IHS.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I always find it interesting when I talk to people in the health IT field or in the IT field that used to be in the medical field, how that worked together. Give me just a sense of your background. Did you fall into IT or did you always have an interest in IT and the medical side just kind of came together with it?
Well, I was a math and physics major in college and didn't really know what I wanted to do. And my brother-in-law, who was a doctor at the time, influenced me to go into biomedical engineering. And I went into a graduate program of biomedical engineering at the University of Virginia, which involved doing some computer programming and that sort of thing. But I took my first physiology course and was fascinated by that. And that influenced me to drop out of biomedical engineering after the master's degree and go to medical school and became a family physician and decided to go into the Indian Health Service upon completion of my postgraduate training in family medicine and the master's degree in public health. And so I've kind of evolved through direct primary care through some management leadership, and then back into health IT. And I've always felt that at the facilities I was working at, we always did use the health information system that I'm sure we'll discuss today. And so I've been involved in that both as a clinical user and as a manager, and then now as somebody who's involved in the actual development and support for the system.
Which I think that is so important when it comes to health IT, and many times it comes to most technologies, that the person has some on-the-ground experience in terms of the challenges and the issues that people face. Because I think many times CIOs and technology experts get put in that box of, well, you've never done what I needed to do. It's all about theory. And you can apply that theory to actual on-the-ground experience. Because as you said, you've worked in Arizona, Alaska. You said this is your fifth duty station. So how does Washington, D.C. compare to the rest of them?
More humid.
Just a little, yes.
Then Arizona, where I've been the last 7 years.
Let's talk about that mission for a little bit. How do you, as the CIO, support the Indian Health Service's mission?
Well, it's important to remember that Indian Health Service is not a technology agency. We're a healthcare agency, and our mission has to do with healthcare. And so the mission of IHS is to raise the physical and mental, social, and spiritual health of American Indian, Alaska Native people to the highest level. And our role in the Office of Information Technology is to provide the technologies that support the agency in accomplishing that mission. So we have a technical role, which is to provide the infrastructure that allows for this extremely decentralized and distributed agency to operate across 35 states, including some of the most isolated parts of the country, like the clinic at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And so we have a highly available, secure, and continuously monitored network backbone, as well as electronic mail services for all the federal IHS sites and those tribal programs that want to participate and use the services. On the federal side, we have 12 regional offices and about 130 healthcare facilities, and in addition to our headquarters offices in Rockville. And all of those have to have reliable connectivity, essentially 24/7. And in addition to the technical support, we have the resource and patient management system, which has been the IHS Health Information Solution since 1984. Our PMS has a full range of clinical and business applications that support healthcare delivery at all these IHS tribal and urban healthcare facilities, and it includes a certified electronic health record. We continuously update our PMS to add functionality in response to user input, as well as the external requirements and initiatives such as a meaningful use. Our PMS, by the way, is the first government-developed system to be certified for Stage 1 meaningful use as a complete EHR for both inpatient and ambulatory settings. And the software is public domain or open source and is provided free of charge to our federal and tribal health programs and, in fact, to anyone who wants to use it. Our PMS, in addition to the EHR, has a practice management suite with billing and pharmacy point-of-sale applications, behavioral health, case management, population health, performance reporting. And so by maintaining this system and providing it to the users in the healthcare system, we're supporting the high-quality care and enabling our hospitals and eligible providers to be successful in qualifying for meaningful use incentive payments. So we're all about providing the technical and information system support for the delivery of healthcare throughout IHS.
That's a huge, huge mission. As you said, you're 35 states, 12 regional offices, 130 healthcare facilities, and you're responsible for a lot of the technology, a lot of the connections. What does that do from your perspective in your office? How do you keep that going? Because you have to keep a network up. You have to make sure that the software is working. And if there's a hole or a patch that you need to push, it's got to happen. How do you balance all those different competing needs?
We've been doing it for a number of years, and we've managed to create an organization that is competent to do that. We have offices in Rockville, Maryland, and Albuquerque, so we have some redundancy across the country in the services and in the hardware that we support. And we also have a small office in Tucson, Arizona, that's mostly focused on clinical software development. It's a big task, but we've got a really good group of people working on it, and I think we've been pretty successful at it.
And let's talk about your staff a little bit. How many federal employees do you have? How many contractors do you have? And what was your IT budget for 2011?
We have about 85 federal employees in OIT and plus a few vacancies, and about the same number of contractors that actually work out of our offices. The recurring funding for OIT is about $41 million a year, and we also provide or coordinate about $15 million in services that are funded by other headquarters or area offices. So I'd say that OIT manages an annual budget of about $56 million. Our area offices, the 12 regional offices and facilities, have additional IT shops on top of that that provide support regionally or locally, and they employ a total of about 260 people and have additional expenditures of around $115 million. And those numbers, by the way, don't include the information technology services provided by and for tribal healthcare programs that have their own IT staff. So we're pretty distributed. We have our headquarters operation, and the federal sites and areas have IT operations, and then the tribes provide their own services for the most part.
Does that all roll back up to you as the CIO of the Indian Health Service, or do you work with those IT leads in the regional offices and the tribal healthcare programs to make sure everyone's on the same page when it comes to architectures or enterprise services, stuff like that?
It's collaboration. I don't have a direct line authority over those operations. We provide the standards and the requirements, and then we work with the areas and the tribal programs, especially those that are on our network, to ensure that they are able to be in compliance with those requirements.
All right, very well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of those priorities and get an update on how you guys are doing with that electronic health record. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Service's Acting Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist?
How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Services Acting CIO. Now, Howard, before break, we talked a lot about your office. We talked a lot about your mission of the Indian Health Service and how you as the CIO supports that mission. You give us a little bit of a glimpse about the electronic health record in terms of how you guys support that. Give me a sense of what are you trying to accomplish? What are your priorities over the next 6 or 12 months?
The priorities of the Office of Information Technology are aligned with broader priorities of Indian Health Service, which include improving relationships with Indian tribes, supporting reform within the IHS, providing the highest quality of care, and remaining transparent and accountable in everything we do. In specific terms, our near-term priorities include ensuring that our systems are fully compliant with ICD-10 transition before it takes effect in less than 2 years, in late 2013, as well as ensuring that the RPMS electronic health record is certified for meaningful use when the stage two phase of meaningful use goes into effect. With respect to ICD-10, this is a huge transition that requires updating most of our electronic information system, both the clinical and the business office applications, as well as training across the country for clinicians and billers and coders who need to become aware of and knowledgeable in the new coding system. That's the single biggest effort that we have over the next 2 years, in fact. In addition to the clinical application development and support, we have to maintain a secure and available system. And one of the biggest initiatives right now that we're continuing to work on and have been for some years are the security requirements and identity management requirements of HSPD 12, Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, which has to do with ensuring that anyone that's on a federal IT system has their identity clearly validated and that the systems remain secure. So that's a big effort that is not only an effort of our office, but of the program offices in IHS as well. And in the near term, we've got a little bit of reorganizing we're going to do within the Office of Information Technology, which I guess is the prerogative of any new executive coming into a role such as I have.
All right, so a little bit on your plate there. Let's start some of the easy stuff. The ICD-10 transition, break that down. What does that exactly mean?
Well, ICD stands for the International Classification of Diseases, and it's the code set that's used to describe health conditions and diagnoses. Anytime a provider sees a patient and puts down a diagnosis, that's put in terms of an ICD code. The United States is still on version 9, which we've been on for decades. The rest of the world has transitioned to ICD version 10, and we are the last major country to make this transition. Anytime a patient is seen, whether it's on an inpatient or an outpatient side, their diagnosis is coded in terms of ICD. And on the inpatient side, any procedures and interventions that are done with that patient are coded in what's called the ICD procedure codes. And those codes are what go on the bills to Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurers. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, about, 2009, basically said that by the end of fiscal year 2013, all HIPAA-covered entities that bill CMS have to use ICD-10 codes. So on October 1st, 2013, everyone who sends a bill to CMS for Medicare or Medicaid has to have that bill coded in ICD-10, and that's less than 2 years from now. And everybody across the country, not just the federal system such as ours, are working to transition their systems to be able to use the ICD-10 code set. It's a huge effort because the ICD-10 code set is conceptually quite different than ICD-9, and there is an order of magnitude more codes on the ICD-10 side, and there's a lot more granularity to the codes. And so clinicians have to know how to document in a way that the coders can actually select the right code from the documentation so that the bills will be accurate and won't be rejected and will be paid. So it's a transition that involves both information systems as well as business practices throughout any healthcare enterprise. And in fact, anybody who consumes that data from healthcare systems, if they are using ICD-9 codes to do performance measurement or quality assessment or statistical trending or any of that kind of thing, they're going to have to transition over to ICD-10 codes because the data they'll be looking at will be in the context of ICD-10.
That sounds like a major, as you said, major undertaking. From just an Indian Health Service perspective, you got into the weeds nicely for us, but what's it mean in terms of what are you going to have to do to your systems to upgrade them? Is it a whole new systems? Is it just, as you said, the codes are an order of magnitude. There's more to them and more granularity. It's just redoing the data inputs. Give me a sense.
The data tables that contain the ICD code set will have to be modified to accommodate the different code set, the code structures, and the number of codes. And then any application that references that code set or displays codes has to have different programming interfaces with the database, if you will, in order to be able to retrieve and display the correct codes. Now, fortunately, our system has a lot of similarities to the VA's VISTA system, and they're in the same situation right now of updating VISTA. And so we're working actually closely with the VA on this process, and we're making sure that our decisions are consistent with one another. And the fact that the VA is working on this will help us a lot in simplifying the amount of programming that will need to be done. The RPMS is a suite of multiple applications and what we call namespaces, and there are about 64 of those that we think we're going to have to update in order to make the ICD-10 transition. So anytime we do that, of course, there'll be a fair amount of integration testing that will have to be done to make sure all the modules of RPMS continue to work well together. I'm confident we'll be able to do it. We have a good understanding of where we need to go. It's just getting the work done, getting the testing done, and getting the updates released to the field in a timely way for them to be trained and begin using them by October of 2013.
So in a sense, it's a double deadline. It's not just getting the software finished, but actually the training too. Do you have a deadline in terms of we hope to get all the coding and all the systems ready 6 months before that October deadline or something like that?
That's actually pretty close to true. We will be doing most of the development in fiscal 2012 and our testing and release management hopefully in the first 6 months of 2013 so that we've got several months of lead time before the actual switch has to be turned on. I don't know that the project schedules have that level of detail quite yet, but we are targeting the third quarter of fiscal 2013 to have our software development done.
All right. Sounds like something to follow up with you and maybe our friends over at VA about in the coming year or so. One of the other priorities you talked about was updating your clinical applications. The new coding system, is that related to the ICD-10 or is that even something different?
There's a definite relationship with the clinical applications. Although ICD-10 is used for billing purposes, it's also used as the code set for clinical diagnoses. And so clinicians who see the patients have to actually indicate what the problem is or what the diagnosis is for the encounters. And those narratives of what the patient has get coded into the ICD code set. And so we have to modify the database on the back end to incorporate the ICD-10 codes and have the various applications be able to read and write those codes. But at the user interface level, we have to make changes that allow the clinicians to provide the documentation that will support the coding that gets done.
This is all being done in parallel, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't do one and then do the other.
Right. It's all being designed and developed at the same time.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit upon one of my favorite topics. But first, you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Services Acting Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Services Acting Chief Information Officer. We talked a little bit earlier about electronic health records. Obviously, the Indian Health Service has been way in front of many other agencies and if you will, the rest of the world when it comes to using this type of technology. But now you guys also, you mentioned about working with VA, for instance, on the ICD-10 coding changes. Give me a sense of that work around the electronic health records with VA and the Defense Department and even HHS.
We've had a very long history of collaboration with the Veterans Administration on health information technology. As I mentioned before, the RPMS is based on the VA's VISTA system, and it was first launched in 1984 initially to help track outbreaks of diarrheal illness in children. And the two systems, VISTA and the VA and RPMS and IHS, have evolved together over the years. And we've been fortunate to be able to take much of the VA's code and incorporate it directly into our system. And what this has done is reduced our costs in developing and maintaining RPMS, and it's allowed us to do some value-added development that's more specific to the mission of Indian Health Service. For example, the VA's radiology and their VISTA imaging, which is their multimedia application, and barcode medication administration applications, we use those in IHS pretty much out of the box. For the pharmacy and laboratory, and to some extent the EHR, we've taken the VA's core development. We've made modifications and enhancements that make sense for our settings. And so, again, this has allowed our very small development shop to focus our efforts on other things like public and population health and immunizations and child health and business office applications where our business processes or patient population is different than that of the VA. We've also collaborated with other federal agencies on telehealth, and probably the biggest example of that is the Alaska Federal Healthcare Access Network, also known as AFCAN, which arose out of a partnership between the IHS, the VA, the Department of Defense, the Coast Guard, and tribes in Alaska, and created telehealth technologies that are used now to serve over 300 communities and federal sites in Alaska. And the Alaska Federal Healthcare Partnership remains active. Army, Air Force, Coast Guard, VA, IHS, tribes, and right now their focus is on home telehealth and virtual clinical teleconferencing. With respect to HHS, since we've done performance monitoring, performance evaluation in our electronic system for about 10 years, that's clinical quality and performance measures, we're working with the HHS on some of the activities they have currently to align clinical quality measurement between agencies.
The other thing that you guys are doing around health IT that's really been in the leading edge is the use of telemedicine. I know that you guys have really pushed the use of telemedicine to rural populations, rural locations. Discuss how that's going, what kind of progress you're making, and how are you getting rid of those barriers?
In IHS, we do recognize that telehealth has a lot of potential to improve care and our systems of care, and we already use a variety of different telemedicine technologies across the country. From my perspective, I view telehealth as a set of tools to deliver necessary health services, not as an end to itself. So facilities will decide how they need to deliver the healthcare services, and in many cases, one of the services that they'll need to provide is telehealth. For example, in some place, they might have a local psychiatrist who can provide psychiatry consultation services. At other places, those services may not be available locally, and it would be valuable to set up a telepsychiatry program. And so each facility has its own needs and makes its own decisions about what tools are most appropriate in the context of their service area and their service population. But as you point out, in the locations where we serve, which are often very rural and very isolated, there are barriers to being able to do this. And the technical barriers are part of that, internet access and bandwidth. But the other significant barrier is basically reimbursement policy. In terms of technical, both wired and cellular access does continue to get better in the remote areas that we serve, and the tribes are doing a lot to establish the bandwidth and cellular services that they need in order to participate in not just telehealth, but the whole electronic economy. But it still lags fairly far behind the rest of the country. You got great 4G cellular service in D.C., but you don't see that out on the reservations, although the Navajo Reservation is implementing 4G at this time. From the reimbursement policy standpoint, though, I have to point out that Indian healthcare facilities, both federal and tribal, depend on third-party reimbursement to provide and expand their services, and it's hard to make the business case for actually investing in telehealth programs, both hardware and staffing, if the sustainability can't be assured through reimbursement for the services. And this is especially true for certain technologies like the asynchronous store and forward teleconsultation that the Afghan system provides, as well as for home monitoring. So there are technical barriers in terms of bandwidth, but there are also policy barriers that are to some extent beyond the control of IHS. And we believe that our facilities would invest more and do more in terms of telehealth if it was clear that they would be able to be reimbursed for those services.
Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today was Howard Hayes, the Indian Health Services Acting Chief Information Officer and Director of the Indian Health Services Office of Information Technology. Howard, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you again for inviting me. It was enjoyable.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.